Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist. I hope you're all enjoying the holiday season. Tonight I have a special treat for you as we choose key moments from this year's coverage of the UFO file issue and the associated geopolitical fallout. I'll also be including insightful, rare, and even banned material from my deep interviews with Dr. Joseph Farrell, former Assistant HUD Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz, esoteric researcher and close friend and contributor to the X-series Gigi Young, and author John Warner IV, son of the late Senator John Warner, who was a member of a deep government UFO research group. These all-stars will give us all a deeper look at the power structure here on planet Earth. Please join us now. To say that the Mellon family, of which you're a part, is in they're in the news quite a bit right now because of Chris Mellon, who worked in defense intelligence for George W. Bush and President Clinton, and he's part of this UFO, UAP disclosure operation. Of course, he came through the TTSA coming out and saying, well, UFOs are a threat, and we need to get this out to the public, that there's a threat out there. What is going on, and how does the Mellon family feel about Chris and the things that are going on with him right now?
Well, that's a difficult question, but I can only speak for the Mellons I know, my cousins, a few cousins and family members who are somewhat awake as to some of the UFO reality, and but they are not at the level where you and I are. You know, I've known Chris since 1973. You know, we're friends. It's nothing personal. This is just business. But I've been waiting 5 years for him to be more forthcoming about this. We've had meetings together. We've discussed it. And I begged him to let me help him. But I think he thought I was too much towards the wild stuff, as he called it. You know, and
that real UFO disclosure, shall we say?
Yeah, and you know, I drew him a TR-3B and I showed him how it worked, you know, plasma ring, you know, the nodes using, you know, powdered quartz and monatomic gold and plasma and torsion fields, and he would have none of it. He just stuck to his script. And I got the feeling, you know, he wants to work from a narrow playbook. I think he and Lou Elizondo represent a series of faction within the military corporate industrial complex. Intelligence complex that wants some kind of disclosure, but not too much. And as I told you earlier, it reminds me of a race car on a frozen lake. They keep incrementally putting more power to the ground, but they're only going in circles. Mm-hmm. And I finally, you know, my father and my wife and I agreed that I should at some point come forward and tell my story about the family, which, and then these are my opinions. I don't speak for the Mellon family. I speak for, you know, myself and a small group of people, you know, on certain things.
Let's talk about Chris for a moment. He's out there with Lou Elizondo, who is a former counterintelligence agent, worked for the CIA, worked for James Clapper, John Brennan, those types of guys. He came out as, you know, his latest role is, I'm a whistleblower. I had to get out of the Pentagon and tell everyone about UFOs and all the rest, saying that people inside the Pentagon didn't take the subject seriously, which on the face of it sounds absurd because we know the Pentagon takes everything as a threat. Elizondo and Mellon have now kind of come out of the crashed TTSA operation for the past few years where they did TV shows and all the rest of it. But the two people that are coming forward, it seems, are kind of an odd couple, you might say. Chris Mellon, from the Mellon banking family, background with George W. Bush intelligence in defense intelligence, and worked for Clinton in the late 90s. What's going on with the combination of these two figures being the face of UAP, UFO disclosure, and the threat narrative?
In my view, you know, my friend, Captain Daniel Cross, he was ONI for 30 years. He knows Lou. I don't. And we had several conversations, and he said, you know, you need to steer clear of Luis Elizondo. You know, your cousin, I understand, but, you know, this is a guy who is U.S. Army counterintelligence officer, you know, that could talk the bark off a redwood tree. I mean, I've never seen anybody, you know, talk about spinning on ice. You know, I've never seen anybody talk so much and say so little.
Yeah.
I mean, my hat's off to him.
You know, right.
He's got the gift. I've known some counterintelligence types, you know, and they call me up and they're like, oh, man, I thought I was good, but this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and they are an odd couple. And when I had my meeting with Chris, and we were at my farm and we had a couple scotches, and he said, you know, and I said, well, you know, I don't understand this whole Tom DeLonge thing with you and Semi Van and Putoff. And he tried, Chris and Hal Putoff sent me an email and said, do you want to invest in Hal Putoff's quantum underwater communication system? And I said, no, doesn't the Navy already have that? I mean, they've got quantum computing on the yin yang and zero point energy in their submarines, you know, and other ships, you know, why wouldn't they have that? And so that was very odd. So I think Lou and Chris are a very odd couple. You know, it's like the posh Yale, you know, Mellon, deputy undersecretary of, I don't know what the hell. And, you know, Lou Elizondo, you know, an in-country, you know, tough guy. You know,
yeah.
I don't know if he was into the interrogation business, but, you know, there's some rumors about that. But, you know, I was told, you know, this guy, but you can just, I mean, you listen to him and he'll speak for 2 hours and you're like, wow, there's 2 hours of my life down the drain. He said nothing. And they
talks, you know, a lot and says not a lot.
This, but let me speak to this rubber tire issue that, you know, the hubcaps flying, and we think that was a threat. You know, someone threw a hubcap off a roof, filmed it with an 8mm, but we take that very seriously. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, and then Chris comes out recently on the Joe Rogan show and tries to debunk Bob Lazar, of all people. Now, Bob Lazar, by his own admission, he was a physicist and an engineer and said, look, here's what I saw. Here's how UFOs fly, and that's it. I don't know anything about the politics or, you know, Mars bases or moon bases. I don't know anything about that. It's just I was there in the hardware. I did my job. They blank slated the hell out of me, and, you know, yada, yada. Have a nice day. And Chris has to come out on the Joe Rogan show and debunk him?
Yeah.
You know, there's a million other people. That's low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
You know, they go on shows where the host, like George Knapp, and I don't know, Richard Dolan, you know, I appreciate Richard Dolan. You and I, his early work was foundational, but now he's trying to make friends with these guys. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
In my view, that's the wrong tactic. You know, Winston Churchill said it. You can't negotiate with a tiger with your head in his mouth.
Wow. That's a really great point.
You cannot do that.
Well, you know, that says it for the entire UFO community, in fact, that, you know, getting more and more into this, and there's so many of them who are getting encircled and getting wrapped up in and entangled with this Elizondo TTSA op, which is all about a threat. There's aliens, the UFOs are up there, they're a threat, and what are we going to do? You know, I'm a whistleblower, I'm coming out to say this, and all these people need to protect me. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, can you imagine you or me or Greer or Linda Moulton Howe or anybody debating Lou and Chris?
Right.
Forget it.
Yes.
They will never do that.
No. I've invited
Lou. We know too much, and our belief systems are 100%.
Well, the problem is that their fundamental narrative story is so, invented. And the threat narrative is just the kind of the cherry on top of the whole thing. What's interesting, it's interesting to me that you said that, though, because very often when people talk about the Elizondo thing, it's just the latest persona because, you know, he came out originally as I'm disgruntled. You know, my program ended in 2012, but I stayed 5 more years, supposedly, because, you know, I was supposed to be this disgruntled employee who left the government because I thought they weren't taking UFOs seriously. But since that program ended in 2012, I hung around for 5 years. That, first of all, didn't make any sense. And then he did a lot of, and this is well documented by people like the Black Ball, where he said all kinds of inconsistent statements. And then TTSA did all sorts of, who are we going to put forward? Are we going to use Harry Reid for this? Are we going to use Elizondo? Are we going to use Chris Mellon? And finally, it seems after all the dust settled, the latest persona is that he's a whistleblower. He's been done wrong. And as we were talking about this Politico article today, he says now, oh, I can't have gainful employment because the government's against me. He is the government.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't fool anyone in the disclosure movement, I hope. The American people are, you know, asleep by design, ill-educated by design, and ill-informed by a corrupt media by design. You know, it's a funny story. This is back in the early 90s. My dad and I were watching CNN, and the day before they had slammed him on something, and he was pissed. And I said, and they were talking about something. And I said, Dad, they're lying. You know, Admiral, somebody told us they're lying. He said, oh, for God's sake, that's their job. No, they do nothing but lie. You know, and so I knew 30 plus years ago that the media was just, you know, dog and pony show. They talk about lying by omission. They just, oh, there's no UFOs, you know, there's only hubcaps, you know. But to me, in my view, it seems like Lou and Chris are playing from a Pentagon, DIA, something, you name it, pick an alphabet agency, playbook. And the last 5 years, they've covered most of it. Ah, tab 26. Lou, it's time for you to go out, go rogue. And say, oh, wait a minute, and say, yeah, just do your thing. And it's like, it's time to do that.
Yeah.
And it's like according to a script. And that, I'm not alone. You know, some of the people I've talked to here in DC, they're like, oh yeah. No, they're on a schedule. This has been scripted. It's on a schedule. These guys are, you know, they're not rogue. It doesn't fool hardly anyone. They're not on their own. You know, Chris writes an op-ed piece for The Hill and says, I challenge the Pentagon to release more. You are the Pentagon, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, you represent factions that don't want real disclosure going at all because they don't care about the UFOs and the Tic Tacs, you know, and the other things, which are Lockheed Martin. You know, they'll just, what I think they're going for, and it's not too far from what you think, is they're creating space that's mostly empty, you know. But what they're doing is say, you know, in a couple of years, the Space Force will declare, you know, the black triangles and the Tic Tacs, they're Lockheed Martin. See, there's no ET, there's no, you know, nothing. Go back to work, go back to school, have a nice day.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what they're going for. They're going for, not that they're disrupting the disclosure movement, which is growing by the day. I've seen it grow for 30 years, I'm sure you have. But they're trying to slow it down to this 50-year plan so that everyone can retire into the sunset without this, you know, the revealing of the dirty laundry. You know, and I'm not sure what 100% constitutes that, but you and I are both in agreement that there's drugs. You know, the CIA makes movies with Tom Cruise. Ha, ha, ha. You know, Scientologist. And it, you know, banking fraud, you know, and illegal weapons sales, amongst other things, you know. And there's a lot worse things in my playbook on that, but I'm not going to mention them.
That's the real disclosure.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about. And that's been wrapped up around the UFO secrecy.
The UFO back engineering technology, you know, I'm sure a lot of that's come from crash UFOs. But I wonder if the stories of UFOs just landing and somebody saying, here's the keys, what do I get?
Next up, we have the special interview with mystic Gigi Young, who kicked off intense activity from all sides with her deep insights on the elite rituals having to do with the planet Mars.
You've been emphasizing Mars a lot in your own work. And you're identifying where there are groups now, like the Elon Musk type thing, or the military version of space, where they have an overemphasis on Mars. And this gets back to maybe an ancient worship system that is part of that kind of secret society piece hanging in the background there on the political spectrum.
Oh, 100%. If we peel back the layers of secret societies, we'll find out that there's a very intricate cosmology that they have. And this is outside of like religion and outside of the average person's kind of understanding. And one of the things that I've realized is that this is something that's really not spoken about. It's not talked about. I would say it's really held close to their chest because of how important it is. But Mars is actually a huge religious planet for them. It is a future planet for them. They see it as somewhere where they can return to. They believe, many of these elite groups, they actually believe that they came from Mars, that humanity came from Mars, and that part of their life purpose is to return to Mars. And so we see Wernher von Braun writing this book called Project Mars.
Right.
Why are we doing that? And then you look at the
book. Getting a little obvious, right?
Right. And then you look at, and he's done all the calculations, right?
Yeah.
And then he's mentioning, I think, in that book or a complimentary book, he's talking with Elon.
There's no question. He's predicting it outright.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And this is a ritual. This is a ritual. And so everybody's sitting back and cheering like, oh, we're going to be this spacefaring society. How amazing. But we have to understand that going to Mars and the development, the space development of NASA, of all of these private space programs, this is a religion.
Right.
That's what this is. And Mars is a huge part of that. And a lot of it is due to certain events that occurred during Atlantis and the overlapping of certain higher spheres of life over the planet at certain times where certain beings did migrate here. We call them maybe the fallen angels or whatever. But it's something that they hold very close to their chest because I believe that they want to spring it on us at the very last minute and tell us what our origin story is and connect it to Mars. And so it's a very long conversation probably.
I think this is fantastic actually, because they're making such a big piece of it. We know with the space program, they stopped going to the moon in 1972. A lot of people challenge whether they even went, but for the sake of argument, for sure, you know, I think they went. That period, 50 years of hanging out between 72 and we're going to be 2022, they're going to the moon in 2024, which is something that Mike Pence set up under Trump with the Space Force and the Space Council. That's 52 years. So what do you do with 52 years of development that's paid for by the public but completely out of sight and not mentioned in any newspaper except for, well, here's a shuttle launch and usually those things are blowing up. I mean, obviously, they're doing something totally different.
Exactly. And if we factor in that they're, if we can understand what their esoteric, spiritual, religious belief system is, then we can understand them. Right. Then we can understand what's going on. And I mean, what is going on? I mean, what is going on with the pandemic, with the injections? All of this is part of a religious belief, an esoteric belief system. All of this, it's part of that.
But don't you know it's just science, Gigi? False science.
They believe, this is the thing, science has become their religion.
Yeah.
And they now, because it's like, you know how we were just saying, you know, you have Rudolf Steiner coming in and doing the heavy lifting and saying, you know, we're going to have mysticism and spirituality move into a science. But then you have this group over here that's making it weird and that's turning it around and that's kind of inverting it and making it, and certainly making it about science, but to a weird degree. It's like somebody has the information of the mystery schools, but has no idea how to actually work with the energy or work with beings or whatever it is. That's basically what it looks like, because it's an inversion of what it's meant to be.
So it's an attempt to kind of like grab humanity's attention and get them all on board with a kind of pseudo spirituality based around a belief system in their discoveries. And somewhere in those discoveries, they're going to arrange for our origins to have been picked up in ancient Mars. There's going to be ancient Martian ruins, and that's going to prove it for sure. We come from Mars, and therefore this whole bloodline here on Earth that relates to that, those are the real kings and rulers.
I wouldn't be surprised. From what I've seen in my own work and what I've seen them actually release, like I just saw an episode of Ancient Aliens where they basically said that. They basically said, you know, our origins are on Mars and we're returning there.
Right.
And they've said that various different times. And I mean, they just released the Mars rover. And in the article for the, I believe it was the Sun, they said, searching for our ancient origins, searching for life, you know, so this is what is being prepared. And a lot of people will look at that and they'll say, well, this is science and this isn't spirituality. This isn't esoterica. This is just science, and science is safe. Science is objective, and science, it's just not true. This is a ritual, and science can just be a very advanced and precise form of ritual and the occult. And, you know, if they were to come forward and convince humanity that either human origins are on Mars or that their particular origins are on Mars, so they're these Anunnaki gods, that would completely change human consciousness, because suddenly humanity would be adding this truth to themselves that's not true, and it would affect your trajectory. It would affect your belief about yourself and therefore your own development spiritually. So it's very dangerous to give someone the wrong origin story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. Do you think that, well, they've rolled out the Anunnaki thing before. They had the whole trip with, oh, the Sumerians, you know, they came down and Anunnaki tooled with them a little bit, monkeyed with their DNA, made them mine gold, and then they left. And, you know, that whole story relates to that. They hammered away on that, on the alternative side, trying to get it as like a belief system. And there's no question, a lot of people actually do believe that. But and there are strains of truth in it, of course, because the Anunnaki visited the Sumerians, and there maybe it was a huge emphasis around gold. But what's happening, it seems like even that research was heavily manipulated by the Rockefellers sponsoring Zechariah Sitchin, for example. So there is this thread in there where they want to control that, just with the early origins. Like Carnegie was really obsessed with Egyptian mysticism, obsessed with dinosaurs. So they want access, Gigi, to that early part of the story, because somehow the way that it sits now, they feel like they can alter it and they can somehow use that story as a new building block in consciousness. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. And they're also, the Smithsonian also takes all the skeletons and ushers them away, and they try to keep humanity on a very specific idea about who we are.
Right.
But ultimately, in my opinion, what we're seeing is that there was a group of, you call them interdimensional beings, you could call them future humans, whatever you want. But there's a group of individuals that did come here while humanity was already developed. And they did try to genetically modify humanity. Did they create humanity? No, of course not. You know, if we look at the work of the mystery schools, we know that humanity was formed in the exact image of the cosmos by the cosmic impulse itself, moving down in density further and further until we take a physical form. That's right. So that's a divine human. But what this origin story is an obsession with hybridization. And it will eventually lead to telling humanity that human beings are actually the result of massive hybridization from interdimensional beings. So humanity is not divine. Humanity is actually more like a child. And what we are is the result of just hybridization after hybridization after hybridization from these ET parent beings.
Right.
And so right away, that takes away our divine heritage. That takes away a huge part of ourself. It takes away our inner Christ. It takes away our ability to be sovereign. And it's sort of like we have this huge tyrannical government that's coming in and trying to be our parent and trying to tell us what to do every day and, you know, just closing in on us. And then this is also the same thing that's going to happen in the spiritual or religious scene, where we're going to get these parents that come in that are ETs or interdimensionals eventually. And they're going to say, you know, the missing link is basically aliens, and these aliens are gods, or these aliens are our parents. And really, with the DNA issue, the missing link issue, we actually will let go of some of our qualities or some of our DNA, if you will, as we move down in density, because we can't take it all with us. We can't take all of our abilities with us and all of our magnificence with us. We take a piece of it when we come into this 3D life. And then we work and we work and we work through integration and through discipline and through spirituality to awaken our DNA. So the reason why we're limited here is not because we're limited or that we're great. It's not because of an external being or an alien. It is because of the very structure of the cosmos and how life moves through it as we gain and lose aspects of ourself through the just cosmic rhythms of life, through the natural evolution. It's how we become who we are, is we lose things and we gain them. And we do that through transmutation. So, you know, the natural process of transmutation of having pain and having trauma and then overcoming it, the awakening of the Kundalini, that's how we light up. And so this is very dangerous. It's in a lot of different channeling circles. A lot of popular YouTubers are teaching that, you know, the human being is all a result of hybridization. This is a lower astral false paradigm, and it is very dangerous to our consciousness to believe that.
This next clip was part of a series of videos I did with Dr. Joseph Farrell, which were banned across internet platforms for, quote, impersonating a historical event.
If you were to say, you know, we were just talking about the UK-EU part with space, mm-hmm. and how they want a much bigger role with this. The stuff that went over to Argentina after the Nazis presumably lost the war, and the incredible, you know, pipeline mm-hmm. of these Nazis there, and Perón protecting them for years, and this whole theater of Nazi hunters and things like that. But you've identified things where they've done major tests, where they've utilized major electrical companies mm-hmm. to do mm-hmm. advanced technology tests. What do you think the fruits could be on the surface from that?
I think you have every possibility that this group was successful in, let's say, alpha or beta versions of some sort of UFO-like technology.
Right.
And they have used that, in my opinion, they have used that as negotiating leverage to seed that technology out in return for accessing information. I think this is absolutely what's behind Project Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I think that they did this was they made some of that technology available to us in return for access to whatever information we found out there on the moon. And I fully expect that that type of arrangement was made with the Soviets, and I fully think that it was continued and extended to all interplanetary space probes, particularly to Mars. Wow. I absolutely do. And I'm one of those that thinks you, if you grant the existence of this technology and you grant the existence of tremendous funding over the past few decades, that technology probably has reached a pitch of development that can boggle the mind. So I have no difficulty with the idea that we may already have been on Mars with manned landings, utilizing that technology. In other words, I think the public version of the chemical rockets and all of this stuff is big theater.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, you know, the interesting thing about Bezos and Elon Musk and these people is they've proven that there's nothing terribly advanced about launching a chemical rocket in space with a private corporation. They can do it. They've proven they can do it. They, you know, they shot up Captain Kirk and let him have his fun in space and so on and so forth. So they can do it. And they've been able to do it for a long time. That's the other thing. Remember OTROG.
Right.
Orbital Raketen und Transport Gesellschaft. That big West German compound in the Congo that was talking about privately launching rockets back in the 80s, and they formed a corporation to do it, with Kurt Davis, incidentally, on the board.
Right.
So, you know, this is
really of the UFO file.
Yeah, there's your UFO file.
Yeah.
Once again. So,
you wrote about OTROG in 2013, mm-hmm. I think, and extensively. And what's very interesting is if you look at those OTROG rockets, they look exactly like the SpaceX rockets.
Yeah. Funny thing, too, isn't it?
That's a pretty big gap of 30 some odd years.
That's a pretty big gap. And, you know, Elon Musk is what nationality, by the way? You know,
South African.
German South Africa.
German South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
And let's remember who spilled the beans on OTROG.
Who?
Mikhail Gorbachev.
Oh, right.
Oh. Are you going to help us out, Mikhail, if we get invaded by ETs? Well, sure we will. Thank you, Mr. Reagan, for the invite.
You know, that's really, it's extraordinary because it feels like from Gorbachev's retelling of that, that Reagan was absolutely intent. Uh-huh. He said, oh, he wasn't kidding.
No. And neither was Gorbachev. Right. You know, so you'd have to wonder just exactly what those two did discuss, you know, there in Reykjavik when they sent the translators away, you know. Right. It's just
CIA has always tried to prevent, which mm-hmm. is don't let those leaders get together without our plant in the middle.
Well, think again of Trump and Putin.
Yes. They made such an incredible rancor over that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Exactly what went down there. You know, we don't know. But
this is fascinating because
It's fascinating because what it tells me is that somehow the UFO file is right in the center of all of this.
It is. Right.
It is.
Exactly.
It is. And you're not going to be able to go out and mine asteroids with chemical rockets. I'm sorry, folks.
Right.
It ain't going to happen.
Exactly. I want to trip into this UFO file piece, but I want to say that there's this kind of obsession with Mars that it seems like these guys go through. Let's bring it through the occult window for a second.
Sure.
We know there's been an occult obsession with Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they coming from? You know, I think even back to Lindbergh going across the Atlantic and saying, all these voices lit up and my airplane started talking in my ear. And there's this whole kind of spirits of the air thing and allusions to the war in the air and the war in the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
When they're making such a big deal out of Mars and they want their new home to be Mars, where are they going in terms of the symbology with Mars?
War.
I mean, mythology, the god of war.
Mars is the god of war. Erechal, Hercules, Nergal in Babylonia, Ares in Rome. They're going to war. And when I say that, what I mean is I think somewhere along the line after World War II, that deep state component in this country, and probably in the Soviet Union as well, began to look at old texts that talk about this war, this ancient cosmic war, began to take them seriously for the very simple reason of the appearance of UFOs mm-hmm. in mass numbers after World War II. And you cannot look at the sheer volume of all of those reports and conclude that it's all coming from human advanced technology. And the reason I think that is because at that time, up at least until the 1980s, you know, the alien reconstruction vehicle and all of these other things, you can't look at human attempts to mimic that technology and the tremendous cost and production time it took and come to the conclusion that we're capable of putting all of those things up there and creating all those UFO reports. Mm-hmm. So just by sheer numbers alone, I think you have to conclude that there's some of these things that are not coming from here.
Yes.
So the question is, where are they coming from? Mm-hmm. And here's the other part of the argument. None of them are exhibiting a physics signature sufficient to indicate that they're coming from beyond this solar system.
Oh,
that's the other part of this. That's the big if. And if you're the national security state, you're going to do, in my opinion, a deep dive into those ancient texts and try to decode them. And inevitably, they're going to point you at Mars, and they're going to indicate that whoever was there had a very sophisticated technology and used it in a war and suffered the consequences. Mm-hmm. That's why I think Mars is such a big deal. And then, of course, I think the defining moment for the interest in Mars came with the Viking mission that photographed the face.
Yeah.
Because when that happened, it was photographed on two different days with different sun angles. And this is key. This is what Richard Hoagland has been pointing out over and over again. Because it was photographed and showed the same thing in different sun angles, it could not be a mere trick of light and shadow.
Ah.
A one-off could be. Twice, no. Twice, no. So I think that was the real eye-opener for a lot of those people in the space program at the time, was whatever this is, it's not a trick of light and shadow. And we therefore have to investigate why it's there. You know, mm-hmm. and the other thing to remember is that photograph touched off a raft of Soviet probes that went to Mars.
Oh.
And they have had endless, the Russians have had a lot of problems with their Mars probes. You know, the most recent one being literally sabotaged, I think, on its way into Earth orbit for the kick to Mars. And the Russians maintained that it was a sabotage mission. So I think this is the event that really kicked off the interest in Mars, and I think this is why everyone wants to go there.
Now let's listen to former Assistant HUD Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz as she lays out why we're each owed a stock certificate and all those UFOs whizzing about in our skies.
And the CIA UFO disclosures are probably part of that.
I'm guessing, but I think if I were the CIA, the reason I would do that is to say, you know, we need a global governance structure because we're dealing with a global problem, and you know, this can't be handled by national governments, and, you know, we need a we need the military to respond globally.
I'll tell you, the thing that can dovetail and where we can use the establishment against itself is their big promotion of the UFO file right now. The missing trillions can come right in the middle of that discussion, right, and all those people can go, ooh, start talking about
yeah.
that.
And so, you know, I always tell people, they say, well, you can't get the money back. I said, yeah, but you can get a stock certificates in the UFOs.
Wow. Now you're talking. Why not?
That's our asset.
Yes.
Right?
It's UFO right. Inc.
That's right. If you go back to the 2015 wrap up, there is a picture of a stock certificate
That's
in
right.
the spaceship of John Doe, John, you know.
That's right.
What is it, John Q. Citizen or something?
Yeah. I have
so
it
no,
right
I was very clear, you know, that's our equity. We can, you know, you don't have to sell the UFO and give me the cash. I'll just take a stock certificate in the spaceship.
Now you're talking.
Yeah,
that
there
is
you go.
Incredible, though.
Right.
And we have a discussion, you and I, from 2015, the UFO economy, which lays out really a lot of this track. That's the interesting thing, which is when I say you were ahead of the curve on it, that's what's remarkable in the sense that you had the guts to talk about it also, considering you were, you know, between this world and the investment world.
Well, I don't know, because for a long time, I just tried to understand it. I was slower to talk about it than I would have liked to be, but I just, you know, if you're dealing with a subject where you don't have the intelligence you need to know what's really going on, you know, you have to build a framework for the unanswered questions. And it took me a long time because I used to hate diving into the topic. My tool is money, and that's a topic that doesn't lend itself to being mapped with money.
Yeah.
And you have to really go back way long in history. You have to deal with a lot of bizarre phenomena. It just took me a long, long time. And part of it was, if you look at the work that other researchers were doing and then publishing, you know, they were digging and framing and digging and framing and digging and framing. And so it took me a long time to get to the point where I felt I had a framework that was useful to share.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
It's valuable. No one had ever really tracked the money around it. Something that Jim Mars came up with, and he did one really good book on UFOs, but he understood some of the stranger dynamics, but he found an order deep in the archives of Truman saying, don't shoot at them anymore.
Right.
I thought that's significant, you know, those types of things. And it's that
right.
quality, that caliber of research. Unfortunately, around the UFO thing now, it's gone, like, talk about mind control. It's completely a sick environment.
Well, you just mean because of the
TSA and Elizondo and Mellon and the media threat thing.
So let me go back. There's entertainment, there's news, and there's intelligence.
Right.
They're trying to keep it in the entertainment space.
Yes.
Okay. So Solari is intelligence. I mean, in Money and Markets, John and I will cover some news, but it's really, our focus is intelligence. You know, live a free and inspired life. It's the intelligence to live a free and inspired life. So my impression of you is you're interested in intelligence. You're also interested in history, which is part of intelligence.
Right.
But you're not particularly interested in entertainment. You don't mind being entertaining, but entertainment is not your beat.
Yes.
I think part of what they're doing with the UFO stuff is they're trying to keep it over here in entertainment.
Absolutely.
Right.
No
so,
question about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you ever go over, you know, Fidelity is in Boston. Did you ever go over to and ask them why they were financing
the Excellent point. Excellent
right.
points. Yeah. That's a question they should answer. I agree 100%.
Yeah, considering how many treasuries they hold as asset manager, I would be very interested to hear Fidelity explain why they were financing the Blue Chicken app.
Well, I'll tell you what's bad about the current CIA UFO disclosure one is that they have Marco Rubio as the central leader saying, I want UFO freedom, you know, free the files. I want the information. And knowing that it's at that level, that they've gone into this kind of like, you know.
I wonder why Rubio wants to be part of that.
It's It's an excellent question.
See what the trade was on that one.
That's a really good point. I mean, he's there in Florida.
So there's a rule in hot dogs, a rule in politics, never let them take a picture of you eating a hot dog. Okay. So what Rubio is doing is the equivalent of getting a politician to let people take pictures of him eating a hot dog.
And interesting.
So I want to know what the trade was.
we'll get there for sure. Catherine, amazing. Well,
interesting thing. Just think of this.
Yeah.
Where does DeSantis get the backing to do what he's doing in Florida?
I want to know that too.
Right.
Yeah.
Because whoever that is, that's related to Rubio's doing this.
And DeSantis has been really bucking the system completely.
Well, you know, if you're the mob, it's not good for business, this game. I mean, if you're the central bankers and you can just print money, it's great for business. But if you're the mob and you got big assets and casinos and all these hotels, this is not good for business.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mob always liked the middle class. They make a lot of money on the middle class.
Right. That's the slice of the deep state that actually has a kind of patriotism.
Okay, no. Well, yeah. So they understand if you wreck the neighborhood, it's bad for business.
So, right. Yeah. But the black budget guys, you know.
Well, but here's the question, Daniel. This is the $64,000 question we've been going around and around and around. Who's Mr. Global and why is Mr. Global behaving this way?
Yes.
You know, think about it. We live on a planet where the governance system is a mystery, which is really frustrating because they're clearly changing it radically.
Yeah.
So we don't know, you know, we don't even know where we are now, let alone where they're taking them. So
wow.
I think it's time to turn on the lights. Let's just keep turning on the lights.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us for this special all-star session. I'll close with our JFK UFO file segment from my documentary, X-Protect, UFO File Assassins. Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin of President John F. Kennedy, was portrayed by the FBI as a radical Marxist who hated America and got a lucky chance to shoot the president when JFK's motorcade went by the window of Oswald's new job at the Texas School Book Depository. The Warren Commission, a team of political insiders put together by President Johnson, who assumed the presidency when JFK was assassinated, was told their job was to shut down any questions about the involvement of the CIA or any possible conspiracies. Former CIA Director Alan Dulles, who had been fired by JFK, was brought in to oversee all intelligence connections to the case and suppress them. What was the government so worried about? After all, Oswald had been eliminated only 2 days after being accused of shooting JFK by Jack Ruby, a strip club owner linked to organized crime. During the brief time he was in custody, Oswald claimed he was innocent and was being set up as a patsy.
I don't know what this is all about. I work in that building.
Were you in the building at the time?
Naturally, if I work in that building, yes, sir.
Back up, man.
You're doing the president? No, they're taking me in because of the fact that I'm innocent. So I'm just a patsy.
The problem for the Warren Commission was Oswald's involvement with the CIA and the highly secretive X-Protect wing that operated in the interest of intelligence and aerospace groups to protect the exotic X-technology in the UFO file. The first issue was, if Oswald were to be portrayed as a communist, they would need to explain his work during the summer before the assassination for the right-wing former head of the Chicago FBI office, Guy Bannister, in New Orleans. Bannister's office at 544 Camp Street was a focal point of anti-communist activity, and he was often referred to as to the right of Attila the Hun. How would a communist-leaning leftist who had lived in the Soviet Union find himself working with Bannister? When leaflets that Oswald had been handing out were discovered with Bannister's address on them, more witnesses came forward to say Oswald had worked for Bannister. A series of strange deaths followed these revelations, and these connections were kept out of official investigations. The New Orleans District Attorney, Jim Garrison, had come across these curious links when putting his case together against Clay Shaw in the JFK assassination. He knew Bannister from his FBI days and began to realize that Oswald had been set up.
Lee Harvey Oswald killed no one at all. So the point is, it wasn't a question of being alone or with anybody. He had nothing to do with the assassination.
Garrison believed that Bannister was the key to unraveling what was really behind the JFK assassination. Bannister's background in the FBI reveals the curious fact that he originated the X-Files, creating the name identification for UFO cases that he investigated for the Bureau. When Bannister died shortly before the Warren Commission was released in 1964, federal officials destroyed all of his files. However, a small set of file names were preserved by his wife, who eventually gave them to a local library. The file names give us an idea of what Bannister and his private detective agency front was really pursuing. One bombshell item of interest listed below the JFK assassination was Dinosaur Space Warcraft. This project, officially the Boeing X-20 Dinosaur, was originally conceived in Nazi Germany. One of the paperclip scientists brought over to create an X-series of space planes was Walter Dornberger, who was a general in the SS and Wernher von Braun's superior in the Nazi rocket program. Dornberger was originally slated to face death at Nuremberg for crimes against humanity. By using inhumane methods on his slave labor population, building the V-2 rockets. After his release and move to America, Dornberger had landed the post of vice president of Bell Helicopter in 1952. Dornberger's understudy at Bell was a promising engineer named Michael Payne, the son of the inventor of the Bell helicopter, Arthur Young. Payne and his wife, Ruth, hosted Lee Harvey Oswald and his Russian wife, Marina, at their home in Irving, Texas. Most of the incriminating evidence against Oswald, including the controversial backyard photo supposedly showing Oswald holding a rifle and a pistol, along with communist literature, which photo experts have repeatedly shown were tampered with, seemed to indicate the plan for making Oswald the patsy started very early. On November 23, 1963, the day after the assassination, Irving Police Captain Paul Barger reported that a telephone repairman had overheard a male voice, presumably Michael Payne, speaking from the Payne household in a telephone call, saying he did not feel Oswald was responsible, and he further stated, quote, "We both know who is responsible," unquote. Researchers later claimed the info had come from an FBI wiretap of Payne's phone, but he was never questioned about it. Dornberger was at the very core of the X technology program, and his greatest achievement, the X-15, still holds the record for a manned space plane set 60 years ago. The presence of Oswald at the home of Ruth and Michael Payne, with their deep connections to Dornberger, shows the tentacles of aerospace interests reaching into the major assassinations. Far from being the drifter and loser that the Warren Commission had portrayed him as, Oswald had actually been stationed at a high security position in Atsugi in Japan during the development of the secret U-2 plane. In the summer before the JFK assassination, Oswald, while working at the Riley Coffee Company, which was a CIA front, was telling his fellow employees that he was going to work for NASA, which was why he was moving to Texas. When New Orleans DA Jim Garrison inquired about Oswald's fellow employees at Riley, he learned the odd fact that most of his co-workers had gone on to jobs at NASA or other aerospace companies. During the height of Garrison's investigation into Clay Shaw and the JFK assassination, he got in touch with Warren Hinkle, the publisher of Rampart's magazine, telling him it was urgent that they speak immediately. Hinkle's account follows. "This is urgent," Jim Garrison said. "Can you take this in the mailroom? They'd never think to tap the mailroom extension." Garrison began talking when I picked up the mailroom extension. "This is risky, but I have little choice. It is imperative that I get this information to you now. Important new evidence has surfaced. Those Texas oil men do not appear to be involved in President Kennedy's murder in the way we first thought. It was the military-industrial complex that put up the money for the assassination. But as far as we can tell, the conspiracy was limited to the aerospace wing. I've got the names of three companies and their employees who were involved in setting up the president's murder. Do you have a pencil?" I wrote down the names of the three defense contractors. Garrison identified them as being Lockheed, Boeing, and General Dynamics, and the names of those executives in their employ, whom the district attorney said had been instrumental in the murder of Jack Kennedy. I said that I had everything down, and Garrison said a hurried goodbye. "It's poor security procedure to use the phone, but the situation warrants the risk. I wanted you to have this in case something happens." The investigation trail led Garrison directly to the aerospace companies developing the X technology and the UFO file. His arrest of Clay Shaw was a shot across the bow. It would eventually be revealed that Shaw had been a CIA asset and had a murky trail of associates, including David Ferry. a CIA pilot who had worked closely with Guy Bannister. Ferry was also an expert hypnotist. Garrison discovered that Ferry had been Oswald's squad commander in the Civil Air Patrol when Oswald was only 15. The grooming of Oswald by Ferry and intelligence services had paid off when he was selected as the patsy for the JFK assassination. Garrison was planning to bring Ferry to trial for conspiracy. Instead, Ferry died mysteriously and left behind typed suicide notes. Garrison's case against Clay Shaw collapsed. The CIA had worked overtime behind the scenes to undermine it, according to Victor Marchetti, an assistant to CIA Director Richard Helms. The media would also be used to demonize Garrison's efforts at revealing the truth. When Garrison's Shaw trial was over in 1969, a mysterious document appeared, leaked by an unknown insider who called himself William Torbett. The document revealed a previously unknown government division called Defense Industrial Security Command, or DISC, which was described as a NASA security division, headed by former Nazi rocket scientist Wernher von Braun. The Torbett document identified the following individuals as DISC agents: Guy Bannister, Clay Shaw, David Ferry, Lee Harvey Oswald, and Lewis Mortimer Bloomfield. Bloomfield had headed up Permandex, a CIA front world trade company that specialized in assassinations and was based in Montreal. The earliest blueprint for a group linked directly to X-Protect had been revealed in the mysterious Torbett document. President Kennedy's desire to open the UFO file and share it with the Russian government for purposes of a joint moon mission, as demonstrated in National Security Action Memorandum 271 and his November 12th memo to the director of the CIA. Kennedy had struggled his entire presidency with the out-of-control intelligence community to reassert presidential power over their unconstitutional actions. He mused to aides in private that he was going to smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the wind. A major piece of this effort was reasserting control over the UFO file that had been lost at the end of the Eisenhower administration. E. Howard Hunt, the CIA super spy, best known as the coordinator of the Watergate burglars, revealed to his close friend and attorney for the Watergate 7, Douglas Caddy, the nature of the desperate struggle between JFK and the CIA over the UFO file. Caddy revealed to me what Hunt told him in this interview.
And then we walked out, and on the street there, I thought, well, this is the last time I see Howard. I'm going to make one more stab, okay, and seeing if I can get something here, you know. And I said, well, Howard, why was John Kennedy assassinated? He said, why was John Kennedy assassinated? He said, John Kennedy was assassinated because he was about to give our most vital secret to the Soviets. About to give our most vital secret to the Soviets. And I was stunned by that. I mean, John Kennedy, our president, Soviets, and I never even heard about such a thing. And I said, well, what was that? And at that point, he leaned forward and looked right in my eyes, directed my eyes, and he said, the alien presence. And he reached out and shook my hand and then turned and walked away. And that was the last time I saw Howard Hunt. It didn't mean that much to me. I knew it was important, but it did not mean that much. There's no way I could, in alien presence, I was not really familiar with that either, you know. But I remembered it. I knew it was important.
This breakthrough revelation from a top CIA officer to his friend in private gives us the real mandate of X-Protect. Any official, even the president, who wants to reveal the true nature of the X-technology in the UFO file must be eliminated. They've used this protocol for decades, but their attempts to conceal their actions have at times taken an unexpected turn. George Joannetis had been a pivotal figure in CIA psychological warfare operations during his long career. His work was so secret that it's an accident of history that we even know his name. Journalist Jefferson Morley uncovered it when looking at an intelligence front group called the DRE back in the Kennedy era when Joannetis created the Oswald Project, the ultimate psychological warfare operation. When the House Select Committee on Assassinations convened in the late 70s, the CIA, at risk of exposure, turned to their best psychological warfare officer, Joannetis, to keep their role in the assassination hidden. For his efforts, Joannetis was awarded the Career Achievement Medal. His records have never been released. The CIA has spent millions in legal fees concealing his past. The man who gave Joannetis his medal may give us a clue to the role he played in relation to X-Protect. Bobby Ray Inman, then the deputy CIA director, had a career that was just as mysterious as Joe Anetti's was. He was one of the few government officials who discussed UFOs openly. He went on record saying that recovered vehicles or alien craft were in the possession of the government. He even claimed to have some expertise in the area of UFOs after he retired. He said he was aware of a program to indoctrinate the public about UFOs and was quoted as saying the following. That he, quote, understood who was behind the technology in the crafts, unquote. These are major statements by someone who served in such positions as NSA director and deputy director of the CIA. Inman would eventually wind up on the board of XE, a mercenary outfit used in covert warfare. When we look at Joe Anetti's and Inman, we can see the impact of X-Protect on our policies that lead us right up to the present, with battles over the UFO file continuing and spilling over into private enterprise. The ex-steganography of SpaceX and Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin show that these groups are ready to unleash what has been in development since Hughes Aerospace started down the road of immense secrecy. The Trump administration creation of the Space Force as the sixth branch of the armed services is also an attempt to pull the X technology back under presidential control. X-Protect has thrived in secrecy and have utilized the X technology in the UFO file at the public's expense for decades. The world at large has not had access to the UFO information that's been withheld by a vast power structure sitting in the strange partnership between the CIA on one side and the aerospace defense contractors on the other. It is in fact a covert government that has usurped the public overt government and put in place the perfect storm of a global control grid that's being built with no oversight, but lots of unlimited dollars thanks to the missing trillions at the Pentagon, HUD, and NASA. X-Protect has been there every step of the way, and now we hear from the same partnership between the CIA and the aerospace defense companies that UFOs are a threat and must be added to an already bloated defense budget. And the New York Times runs stories with CIA officials claiming they will give the public UFO disclosure. That soft disclosure means that X-Protect is in a position to roll out the X technology, which means the world is a more dangerous place than ever before. As we remember those who have fallen while fighting X-Protect, we must remember we can move our culture forward by destroying the wall of secrecy erected by these covert organizations. The only way we can do it is to expose X-Protect and the lethal means that they've used to control every aspect of society. In the final analysis, if we are to understand the power structure on planet Earth, we must understand X-Protect and hold them accountable for their actions. The whole world is watching and waiting. I'm Dark Journalist. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you soon.